Hello and welcome to Iowa EdChat Live. We continue to bring you the latest educational news each month, and we are pleased to be able to connect with you tonight. We have a special guest this evening. Kim Strobel is here to chat, and she will be introduced in just a few minutes. You can connect with Kim on Twitter at StrobelED and StrobelEducation.com and KimStrobel.com. As you can see, tonight's chat will have a live video stream, and we will be taking questions from our audience. Please submit these questions via our hashtag, which is IAEdChat on Twitter. We will be monitoring this feed, so please do not hesitate to share your thoughts and questions. We will get this show on our podcast later tonight, so if you have not checked us out on iTunes or on Podomatic, do that. Subscribe to our podcast. Give us a rating. We would love your feedback and engagement on that platform. That helps us, helps our podcast get found, so we really appreciate that. We're going to get some introductions going this evening. I will start. My name is Dan Butler. I am an elementary principal at Epworth Elementary School in the Western Dubuque District. And I'm going to turn it over to my partner in crime, Andrea Townsley.
Hey, everybody. I am Andrea Townsley. I am a former fourth grade teacher turned instructional coach, and I am now a school improvement consultant with Grantwood AEA in Cedar Rapids and surrounding schools. So I'm super excited to welcome our guest here tonight, and I'll give you guys a brief introduction for Kim Strobel. Kim is the owner and driving force of Strobel Education. Her wisdom, positivity, and strength inform every aspect, and it shows in the inspiring workshops she presents to teachers who seek to make a difference. She puts herself in the trenches with teachers because she was once there herself, and she knows how important support and encouragement are in creating a successful classroom. Throughout the past 20 years, Kim has been a fourth grade teacher, a literacy coordinator, director of curriculum, and has recently added the role of happiness coach to her resume, where she guides individuals toward rediscovering their authentic selves and reclaiming their personal and professional joy. Kim sprinkles happiness tips and tricks into her education workshops, ensuring teachers re-enter their classrooms with renewed purpose and passion. What a great time of year to have you with us to kind of rejuvenate for the next school year. So welcome to you, Kim.
Thank you so much, Andrea and Dan, for having me on tonight. Yes, I'm hoping that teachers are renewing themselves this summer, and hopefully we can give them some tips for doing so, because sometimes they get so lost in their kids' ball games and everything else that they kind of forget to replenish their own buckets. So hopefully we can push them a little bit in that direction tonight.
You bet. All right. I'm going to go ahead and get us started tonight so we can start discussing the things that we are here to talk about. So the first thing that we have for you tonight, Kim, is tell us a little bit about your education journey and what brought you to where you are today.
Okay. Well, yeah, you and I have a lot in common. I spent a lot of time in the fourth grade classroom and found myself kind of called to lead in other ways. And so I jumped into a literacy coordinator's position, which was a great opportunity. I was K-12, so it kind of forced me to go in and teach at the kindergarten level, and it forced me to go in and teach at the AP chemistry level. And I always kind of giggle that I was a little more fearful of those kindergartners than I was the AP Chem kids until I spent some time in there and got to see and have a look of what that looks like at the primary level. I started kind of attending some professional development workshops and really began to like feel like, gosh, I think maybe I could like present. Like I feel this need to share all the research that I've done on my own and all the reading. And so at that time, I didn't really know how that was going to happen or what that was going to look like. But I ended up joining another consulting company for about a year that asked me to come on and said, hey, you seem like you really love researching best practice instruction. You have a lot of good stuff to say about it. Would you join our team? And so I did that for a year. And then that kind of turned into like 80-hour work weeks. And it just was not kind of a good fit for me. I still had young children at home. So from there, I went into director of curriculum with the school corporation, had a great superintendent, Dr. Tracy Lori, and she said, Kim, I'm going to let you do this job however you want to do it. And I said, well, then I need to be in classrooms weekly teaching, because I think that's always been really important to me, even as I became a consultant, even when I moved into the admin role. Like, I still wanted to be embedded in those classrooms so that I really didn't lose what it felt like for our teachers. So I did that job for 2.5 years. My non-compete was up with the other company, and I kind of turned to my husband and I said, I want to start my own business. I think I'm really good in the classroom. I think I know how to lead teachers, but more than anything, I think I know how to support teachers and how to empower them. And my husband is very cautious in nature, and he was kind of like, what? Like, you can't do this. You have a stable paycheck and you have insurance. And I said, well, I'm going to do it. So he went to counseling for 6 months and we got him there. And so I launched full-time in January 2016, and it has just been absolutely miraculous. Like, just, I travel the country now, and I feel like I'm just really on a mission to support and encourage our teachers, but also to just really reimagine what education can look like for our students and our teachers. That's kind of my drive and my passion behind what I do. Sometimes it still feels kind of scary owning your own business and, feeling like this is what I'm supposed to do, but it is exactly where I'm meant to be.
Awesome. Thank you very much for the background, Kim. And let's dig into it a little bit and talk to us about the science of happiness and how that can impact today's classrooms in 2018.
Well, it's interesting. So there's a whole backstory to how I became a happiness coach, and we don't have enough time to go into all of that. But the short story of that piece is that I've kind of investigated and researched happiness for the last 15 years because of my own struggles and traumas and different things that I had endured in my life. And so I've always had this really strong pull towards the profession or the personal development field. And so I kind of had two visions a couple of years ago. One, Strobel education, but the other was this happiness coaching piece. And so what I started to do was I started to sprinkle my PD for Strobel Ed with my happiness tips. And what I found is that as soon as I started talking about happiness, like, the teachers were just completely drawn to that. I mean, I would always giggle at the first break, teachers would form a line at my table and they'd be like, can you tell me more about this happiness or this happiness retreat? And do you incorporate that into your curriculum? I need it for my own personal life, but I'd like to know more about it for my professional life. And so I think there's such a hunger for that in the field of education because teachers are just truly exhausted. I mean, they're overwhelmed. They're stressed out. They can never get everything done that they need to in a day's time. And to be honest with you, I think that it is stealing their personal lives from them. And they're feeling the weight of that. And they don't really know how to regain their personal life, but still show up and do their best in the classroom. Because I think that educators, just kind of in their nature, are type A perfectionistic. Like, we're very driven. We always want to do the very best job. So we're really finding a hard time saying, like, okay, how do I honor my profession in the classroom, but how do I also reclaim my personal life? And so I think that's one of the major themes, but I also think, like, we need to teach happiness in our classrooms, because I think that over the years we've kind of, things kind of seem to come in waves. And in the last decade or longer, really, we've kind of done away with a social curriculum. I mean, when I first got into teaching, we taught kids about perseverance. We taught them about drive and kindness and compassion. And then we got all crazy with our standards and we said, we don't have time for any of that. We only have time for reading and writing and math. And so we kind of took our social curriculum out of schools. And now I think we know it needs to be in schools, because that social curriculum is just as important or more important than an academic curriculum.
And I can't wait to talk about that later. I think that's one of our questions, is talking about some of that stuff in the classrooms that we know is so imperative in today's schools. I know, Kim, that you've done several keynotes on the power of a positive mindset and some growth mindset, which are also popular topics in today's schools with educators. So talk to us a little bit about these benefits.
Well, the growth mindset professional development training that we do is, it applies to the classroom and to educators. But what I also love is that it applies to like every human being. Like, you walk away from that training and you don't just have lessons to implement in your classroom, but you also start to change everything about the way you view your life. Because, you know, with the growth mindset, Carol Dweck says that the view that we adopt for ourselves profoundly affects the way we lead our life. And so I think that that is so important, because really, you know, the beliefs that we all hold on to, or even the beliefs that our students hold on to, those are constantly determining what kind of success they're going to have in our classroom and in life. Because of course, you know, the fixed mindset is the mindset that says, like, I believe my intelligence or my skills or my talents are kind of carved in stone, and there's nothing I can really do to change that. And we all have fixed mindsets. Like, I have a huge fixed mindset around healthy eating. Like, I run all these miles, I exercise, I run 30 miles a week, and I'm in my mid-40s, and all of my friends have this app and they journal their points and they eat healthy, and like, I just can't do it. Like, I feel like there's something missing from me, because I eat my four Hostess cupcakes every night before I go to bed. And so, like, really, there's this belief system in me that just says, like, I don't know, Kim, you're just missing it. Like, you just can't get that piece down. And so I'm working on that. But like, we all kind of have things that we have a very fixed mindset about. But then the growth mindset is the opposite. The growth mindset says, look, yeah, you're genetically born with a certain set of skills or attributes or intelligence, but there's things that we can do. You can greatly improve and cultivate those particular skills, and you can grow in ways that you never previously maybe thought before. And so, like, in my profession, I'm very growth mindset oriented. In my personal life, you know, I suffered for years from panic attacks and anxiety that was completely crippling in my own life. And I had a very growth mindset about that. I was very perseverant. I continued to trudge through that for years on end until I finally started to improve my life in really big ways. And so I think the point I'm trying to make is that we are all a mixture of both, but what we want to do is we want to figure out, hey, what is that potential that lies within each of us that we don't even know is there, that's hidden? And then how do we teach kids what's really possible? Because when we can change that belief, when we can change that core belief that a person has, we start to change everything about their life. We start to change the actions that they take in life. We start to change the expectations that they have in life. We start to change their habits for life. And so I think that, like, when we give that training, like, I always have people and they're like, oh my gosh, I needed to hear this about my own children at home. Or as an adult, I see now that I've been carrying around a set of beliefs that says, you know, I'm never going to lose weight, or I'm never going to be an organized person, or I'm never going to be creative. And so what I love about that workshop is that, yes, they go back to their classrooms and they start to change the language they use to talk with kids. But I have so many, like, they actually will start to cry in the training, because for years they've carried around their own beliefs and they kind of have these ahas, like, this is what's been holding me back. So I love, like, we do growth mindset, not just in education. We've started to do it in the corporate world as well, because we all need to learn how do we develop that growth mindset so that we can kind of start to stretch ourselves a little bit more.
Just want to give a reminder to our followers here and visitors this evening. If you have a question for Kim, go ahead and tweet that to our hashtag. We will make sure we get your question asked and we'll keep that conversation going. So Thanks so much, Kim, for your thoughts here tonight. We're going to keep going with the questions that we have prepared. And this next one has us asking, one of your most recent blog posts discusses putting your inner critic on mute. Tell us about this benefit and how to accomplish this sometimes daunting task.
Well, here's the thing about human beings. So the average human being has between 50 and 70,000 thoughts in a day's time. So let me just let you sit with that for a minute. 50 to 70,000 thoughts in a 24-hour period. And on average, 80% of those are negative. So like if you even go back to the first 30 seconds of you waking up this morning, some of us have already had 27 negative thoughts before we even make it to the bathroom, right? Like, I didn't get enough rest last night, or it's Sunday, that means it's one day closer to the work week, or these pants are too tight, or I'm exhausted. And it's like, that's just our default. And as human beings, when you look into the neuroscience of the brain, you figure out that we're wired that way because eons and eons ago, we were all trained to constantly look for danger in our environment. It was a way that we protected ourselves. So our brains are kind of on default. And the other surprising piece of this is that if 80% of those thoughts are negative, 95% of the 80% are the exact same thoughts you had the day before, which means we have to change the neural pathway. We have to change the loop that's going in your brain. And I'm a lot better than I used to, but I've really learned to identify that now because, and I laugh, I have a really bad inner critic. And the way that it kind of came to light with me recently is I'm a marathon runner. I've done the Boston Marathon. I run a marathon every year. I'm pretty successful at marathon running. And this past spring, I called my husband at mile 20 and said, "You're going to have to come pick me up. I can't finish the race." And like, I am never a quitter. Like, I finish everything I do. And so the next day, my husband's like, "So is the hardest part about this, because you keep calling it a failure. So is the hardest part about this, Kim, that like you're worried what others will think of you because you are really good at running?" And I was like, I thought about it and I was like, no, it's like what I think of me. It's how much I've beat myself up in the last 24 hours thinking, you know, got the good old, you know, ball and chain out and started whipping myself across the back. And I was like, it's that voice in my head that tells me, here's all the things you did wrong. You should have known better. You failed at this. This is embarrassing, you know? And so I decided I was going to name her. Like, she's a girl, and I have a picture of her in my mind of what so I call my inner critic Ethel. And I was just like, after 48 hours of Ethel talking smack to me, I was just like, that's it. Ethel, you need to shut up. Like, this is ridiculous, Kim. Not everybody can even run 20 miles. And so I started to figure out like, okay, again, here we go again. It rears its ugly head. It's the same thing like when I give trainings and there might be, you know, 100 evaluations that come back and there's one negative one. And that's the one that we focus on, right? It's probably the same thing for you, Dan, like when you're having meetings with evaluations with teachers and you have to point out areas of improvement and you can just see like some teachers are just so crushed by that feedback. And it's because we're all kind of doing that self-judgment piece. And I think what we need to do is we need to learn to be kinder to ourselves. We would never treat our closest friend the way we sometimes treat ourselves. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I do in my own gratitude journal, and we can talk about that later, but I always make sure that I write at least two positive things, like just about myself, in my gratitude journal, because I need to work on that self-love thing. I think that we all do. And it feels kind of funny sometimes to say that, but you know, I really need to sometimes be kinder to myself. And I think that all of us probably could use a little work on that, because it's amazing what we say in our head about ourselves sometimes.
And we all listen to Ethel way too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I always tell people, like, you need to name her or him. Like, what's his name? Because he's not you. He's this, you know, guy with a sharp instrument inside your head, or woman who's trying to judge you. And so I was like, everybody really picked up on the idea. They're like, oh, I want to think about what's mine, you know, what's his or her name.
So. Well, and with reflection, a lot of times what gets in the way of really positive reflection are those negative thoughts. Yeah. So that's what gets in the way of powerful reflection. So another one of your blog posts that you recently did talked about accepting feedback that might not always be positive. Do you have any pointers for us on this topic?
Yeah, well, I think like, well, for one thing, people who can receive feedback in a healthy way, they have a growth mindset about it. Actually, the fixed mindset people, or the fixed mindset way of looking at things, is that when you get feedback, you feel really threatened by it. Whereas the growth mindset people, it may not be easy to hear feedback. I don't ever think it is easy to hear, but they actually do something with it. So like when I was first, you know, giving my presentations, and still to this day, when I give an evaluation, there's two positives and then something I can do to improve. And at first, I was so hard to like read those things that I needed to improve upon. Like it just hurt me because I knew I had put so many hours into this presentation. But what I ended up doing was the next day I sat down with all my feedback and I started to make these changes in my presentation, which is why I think my presentations are so good now, because like I took the feedback and I actually did something with it. And so like, I think feedback is good for all of us. Like even in my marriage, you know, like we sometimes have to have those conversations and I may have to say like, you know, Scott, you may not mean to, but like, this is what I need from you. And he has to be able to tell me that. We both sometimes can get kind of like, you know, at first, until we can just like receive it. And so here's the deal. I think you have to be willing to feel uncomfortable if you want to grow. If you want to be better at anything, then you need to be willing to feel uncomfortable. And you feel uncomfortable when people give you feedback, but it is one of the best ways for you to improve. And so we have to take that feedback, pick out the pieces that resonate with us. I mean, some goes right out the door. Some is just someone else's issue and I don't feel like it really resonates with what I have going on. So I pitch that one in the trash. But the ones that come across and I'm kind of like, yeah, I think they might be right. I need to look at that again. And so I'm not saying that it's easy to receive that, but I'm saying that if you want to grow in expand, then you need to be willing to get that from someone. But it's hard.
So true. So true. So moving along to our next question for you. A hot topic in today's schools is trauma-sensitive schools. And this is another passion of yours. Tell us about your thoughts on the benefits of setting up a trauma-sensitive, a trauma-informed classroom environment.
Yeah, that is definitely... I'm very thankful that that's becoming a really hot topic. You know, I always taught in schools that had a very high poverty rate. But trauma isn't just around poverty. What we have discovered is that all kids have experienced trauma, and even some who have experienced multiple traumas may come from a highly affluent family. But what we do know is many of the children who are living in poverty have experienced multiple traumas by the time they enter our kindergarten classrooms. And so I think that as teachers, we now need to take that mental health piece very seriously. You know, you might have one or two counselors in the school, but like you have to be managing and informed and educated on what is trauma, and then also those strategies that we use with kids. Because what we do is we actually escalate kids because we've never known how to deal with these children before. And so once we teach educators how to really understand the brain and how it works. And then we give them some coping strategies that actually meet the child where they're at with care and compassion, rather than quickly going into judgment and punishment. What happens is we see that those kids start to feel really safe in our classrooms. And that's what we're really wanting. We're wanting them to feel really safe, honored, valued, and respected in our classroom. And so one of my consultants, Jennifer Mitchell, she's kind of our expert on trauma, and she does a lot of the trainings for us on that. She is a principal, but she has four boys of her own, but she has taken in kids in foster care for the last, 5 years or so. So like she's had a 6 month old baby and then a 3-year-old for the last year. And so she is so good at presenting on that topic because she speaks from like real life experiences, both as a principal of a school where they have done a ton of training on that topic, but then also as a foster parent. And so we kind of are all aware of this. We see what's happening with the suicide rate in our country. We see that mental health is coming to the forefront. And again, it's just one of those skills that teachers we're going to need to learn about it because it's part of our classroom. And then I think the other piece of this is that there's a trauma there for teachers. Like I think that our teachers too are sometimes experiencing trauma. And that's a piece of our training as we also teach the teachers how to deal with their own trauma. Because, you know, when I have a student that I'm going home every single night crying for, because I know what that student has endured and I know what it's going home to, you know, there's a mental emotional component there for the teacher that makes it very difficult too. And so we try to also educate teachers on the traumas that they too might endure by being a classroom teacher.
Yeah, I'll follow up with that. We've just done quite a bit of work within our district in kicking this off, and we're, you know, looking at the research of Heather Forbes. We had Jim Sporleader on Iowa Ed Chat Live a couple of weeks ago and talking about this model and how we go about this. But, you know, we talk about 1 in 4 children have experienced some significant trauma within their lives. So you hit a chord with me thinking about myself as a principal, and I've shared this with our staff. So if we know that about kids, that's 1 in 4 staff members too, right? So that is such a eye opener and kind of jaw dropper, if you will, and thinking about, yeah, there's a lot of things that teachers experience, and that self-care and taking care of themselves, you know, shutting up the inner Myrtle, as one of our followers said, and I forget what you called her,
Ethel.
Okay. Yeah. So shutting up that inner critic and taking care of yourself. So very important. But yeah, thanks for letting me go on my soapbox a little bit with that.
It is important. It really is.
All right, Kim. So retraining your brain is another of the techniques that you promote. What are the steps to this, and how do we make this happen? A lot of the things that you've talked about today are just some things that we need to make sure that we're rewiring or kind of changing the route that we're taking. How do we go about doing that?
Well, you know, there's several steps a person can go through. And one thing is just kind of like identifying the negative Nellies. I mean, we're not judging the negative Nellies, but we all know that there are people around us who go through life and they find every single thing that's wrong and they talk about that. And what happens is when we are around that, you will become that. You really will, because you are the average of the 5 people that you spend the most time with. All right. And so, you know, if you're around people who are complaining constantly, then you are going to become a complainer. So one of the first steps I tell people is I really want you to evaluate who you're spending the most time with. Because if you spend your time with people who are more positive in nature, I'm not saying you can't ever complain or gripe, because we all need to be able to express that. But truly, I think that your vibe is your tribe. I mean, that's one of the models that I live by. Your vibe is your tribe. And so when you look at the people that you're hanging out with, are they the ones that are always complaining? Are they always seeing the negative in every situation? Because I'm not denying that there's not chaos out there and that we're not dealing with some real life disaster sometimes in the field of education. But what I am saying is you have to be willing to be around people then who really see the positive, who know each and every day why they show up for our kids. And so the biggest happiness habit that I think has helped me retrain my brain is the power of gratitude. You know, Oprah has talked about this for years. And some of us have to work harder at it than others. Like I have a really special person in my life, and she absolutely, for so many years, has run the tape of every single thing that's wrong. Like she'll come over to my house and she doesn't mean to be like this, but she'll be like, Kim, do you see that on your wood floor, there's like a really big scratch here? And then like, she'll go to the other room and she'll be like, it looks like there's like a piece missing from this wall. And then like the other day she was walking out of my house and she goes, Kim, did you see that this bird on this lamp has been glued on? Did you know that it was broken? And I told her, I'm like, yes, I bought it for 30% off at TJ Maxx because it was broken. And it reminds me that it's okay to be imperfect, you know, but not judging this person. It's just that when she views things, like she picks out everything that's wrong. And so when we talk about shifting to a positive mindset, and I talk about this to schools, you will literally see some of the teachers like start to kind of put their head down. Because like they know they're the negative Nelly. They know that it's them. And we're not judging it. We just want you to become aware of it. Because what we're saying is we can retrain that. And so the power of gratitude for me has worked wonders in my life. I started out doing 3 things that I was grateful for. Then I increased it to 5. And now I do 10. So for me, every evening, I do my meditation, which is an important part of my life and another happiness habit. And I jot down 10 things that I'm thankful for. And what I have found over the last probably 5 years of doing that is that like because of that, I have retrained my brain. Like I go throughout my day, like this morning I was on a run and I just smelled like all these like summer flowers. And I was like, I'm so thankful for that smell. And then I'm like, I'm going to put that in my gratitude journal tonight, because what has happened is my brain now scans and it looks for things that are right. And that has made all the difference. And so when I was a teacher, I want to give the teachers an idea. And I know, Dan, you said that gratitude is a practice that happens in your school. But when I was a teacher, I created what was called the Grateful Five. And I sent an email to like 7 of my friends. And I said, look, I know this teaching profession can be really daunting. And sometimes we're just trying to survive the day. But I've been learning about the practice of gratitude. And I wondered if you would want to be part of the Grateful Five. If so, try once a day to email a list of 5 things that you're thankful for with the subject line, the Grateful Five. And so what was so neat about that is, you know, different ones would come in throughout the day, but I would sit down for 15 seconds and I would read Loretta's Grateful Five. And then maybe after lunch, I'd sit down and there would be an email from Stacy stating her Grateful Five. And so by the end of the day, I had had my own Grateful Five plus 25 others to read. And so it just kind of kept re-steering us towards positive. So I always tell people, here's the deal. Like I can teach you all the happiness habits, but you have to actually do them. Like you can't just say, I want to be happier. And then you don't go do any of these habits. Like if you truly want to be a creator of happiness in your life, then you have to have happiness habits and you have to do them. And so my gratitude journal is kind of like, you know, that happens almost every single day. And I think my loop has changed over the years, the circuitry in my brain because of that.
You're bringing up a couple of really good points that we've experienced within our district, and kicking off this work with the gratitude. It's, you know, even if you're starting with 3 and you just think, yeah, I just want to be happier and I just want to be looking for more positive things, et cetera, but let's not kid anybody. This is work, right? We say often, and this is probably a quote directly from Sean Aker, but that happiness is not a mood. It's a work ethic. It is a work ethic, and it takes time, it takes intention, it takes practice. And, you know, but when you do commit to that, you do smell those flowers on that run. You do see that maybe that crack in that lamp is a good thing, that it gives you that reminder of, you know what, because it's okay that we're not perfect, and those types of things. So your eyes are open to it, and you get in that, what we call that, that positive Tetris effect, where you see it all the time, right? So we can't say that enough and can't stress it enough, that it's just not, let's do a little gratitude here and there. This is work. It's a work ethic.
And I want to add one thing onto that. I think that, like, we do that in our classrooms. Like, we take 90 seconds at the start of each day, and my kids they're trained to go around, and they say one thing they're grateful for, and it takes 60 or 90 seconds, and it sets my whole classroom towards positive. And so I want to throw that out there. I think that a gratitude practice should be happening in our classrooms with our students.
All right. Powerful conversation happening right now, and I'm wondering if we got just a little bit off track, but what I think we're on right now is, we talked about retraining your brain, but you also talked about in one of your latest blog posts about how public education needs a revolution. So I'm really intrigued about what this could potentially look like. What do you think, Kim?
Well, I love Ken Robinson. And he did an awesome TED talk titled Schools Crush Creativity. And one of the things that I think I'm really kind of motivated to reimagine education is that I think that we're losing a lot of kids because I always teach about the brain. You have the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere, and the left hemisphere of the brain is the logical, analytical, sequential. It thinks in facts, it thinks in words, it follows algorithms, and it does computation. And those are all the functions of the left brain. But the right brain, the right hemisphere, that's where creativity and empathy and compassion and intuitiveness and imagination and daydreaming, all of that comes into the right hemisphere. And so when I talk to teachers about this, I explain, like, what percentage of your day is spent teaching to the left brain? And they're all like, 90, 95%. And I'm like, yeah. And what percentage to the right brain? And they're like 5 or 10%. And I start to quote a lot of Dan Pink's research, because he wrote A Whole New Mind. And what Dan Pink is saying is that, we've been ruled by left brainers. Like, they're the ones in today's world who have gone out and gotten the best jobs. Like, if you were a strong left brainer, then you did great in school and you were a great memorizer and you went on to become a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or a software developer. And if you were a right brainer, like, you hated school. Like, my husband hated school. He's a huge right brainer. He didn't have time to daydream or to be artistic or to be creative or design. And so what Dan Pink is saying is, like, the left brainers have been very successful, but as we move forward, we need our kids to be whole brained, and we absolutely need to pump creativity back into our classrooms. And this really came to light for me a couple of years ago when my son's a basketball player, and he had about three of his basketball friends over, and we were eating chili one August evening, and it was about 3 weeks into the school year. And my son Spencer is a left brainer. He's, like, always been in the honors classes, and school always comes very easy to him. And I just kind of said, hey guys, like, you know, what classes are you in with Spencer? When do you guys see each other throughout the day? And I'll never forget, 6'4" Braden says, Kim, we're not in any classes with Spencer. He's one of the smart kids. We're the dumb kids. And then Ty goes, yeah, Mrs. Strobel, like, we're so dumb, we have to take extra reading and math on top of our regular reading and math. And then Devin goes, yeah, we're not in any classes with Spencer. He's so much smarter than us. And I just remember stepping back because I had just read Dan Pink's book. And so I actually just did my own mini lessons with those boys. And I said, boys, I'm going to teach you about the brain, and I'm going to apologize because school's done a disservice to you. School has made you feel like, and then, like, I can still get choked up about this, but, like, school has made them feel like they don't measure up to my son. And the truth of the matter is, I said, Braden, here's what I know about you. Here's your gifts and your attributes that my son Spencer doesn't have. And Ty, here's what I know about you. And Devin, here's what I know about you. So I'm really sorry that school has made you feel like this. And school has, like school has told them they're dumb because they've gotten D's and F's their whole life. And so I said, like, what you're going to find is that when you go out into the world and you find that thing that you're really good at, or you find that thing that gives you a lot of drive and a lot of purpose, like you're going to blossom. I promise you, if you're willing to do the hard work, you will. But I want you to know that you're just as valuable as my son. Like you are, and you have just as much to contribute. And it just made me think, like, these boys were sophomores at the time, and they truly believed that they were not as valuable as my son. And I know them to be. And I just thought, we have to change this. We have to have different ways of honoring intelligence, and we have to give our kids opportunities. And that's one of the reasons I teach Genius Hour, because Genius Hour is at least 1 hour a week where kids get to work in their zone of genius. And I see them come alive and I see them build confidence. And so I think, like, you know, going back to that blog post, like, I think we must have the courage as teachers. And as teachers, I think we know this to be true. Like, I think we're all nodding our heads and going, yeah. Like, I remember when they took the kindergarten kitchens out of, in the stoves out of kindergarten classrooms. And we said, we don't have time for kids to cook or to play. And what we now know is that that's exactly what our kids need to be doing. I mean, shoot, as adults, we need to play. It invigorates our soul. It reshapes our brain, you know? And so I'm really pushing for, hey, as teachers, how do we play the game of school? But how do we also push out there? How do we also fight for those kids? How do we create a curriculum that also honors the other ways to be intelligent? Oh, I get all fired up about that.
It's easy too. It is easy too. That is definitely hot button stuff with the two of us for sure. We're gonna talk about the Strobel Summit in just a minute, but this is a good time to kick it to our next question, because you started going there with this. But our next question is that we ask all of our guests, if you could change one thing in the landscape of education, what would that be? And why do you feel as you do? Now, you started going there, but we'll provide you that opportunity to go a little further if you'd like to.
Yeah, I think one thing I think we have to do is we have to stop those darn tests that are only measuring left brain intelligence. Like, there's got to be a way that we take that weight off of our teacher's shoulders, off of our students' shoulders, and so that we have a little more freedom to pump some creativity in our classrooms. Like, I think that our kids should be doing art. They should be doing music. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm the girl that can't sing or play an instrument, and I don't do art very well. I think our kids should be able to daydream, should be able to live in their imagination, should have choice. You know, like when we do Genius Hour, and I'm such a proponent of that, but, you know, kids have a choice of what they want to learn. And I mean, I'll never forget the fifth grader last year. She was a non-traditional student, and she said, Mrs. Strobel, I do reading and writing and math, and it, and I don't like it at all, but I do it because Mrs. Leveland says we need to do our best. But she said, my favorite thing in the whole world is the 1 hour we get on Fridays to do Genius Hour, because in Genius Hour, I get to create, I get to study and learn things that I'm interested in. And what Kristen did that year as a fifth grader was she created her own beauty skincare line as a fifth grader. You know, I think she's going to go out into the world and do remarkable things. And so, yeah, I guess if I could change one thing, it would probably be to take that darn test off of the plate so that we feel like we have the freedom to do what we know is right for our kids. And I may have just opened up a can of worms, but I'm going to just say it how I feel.
We're glad that you're honest about that. And I think we all know which darned tests you're talking about. So thank you for your honesty about that. And I don't think you're going to get us to disagree very much there. So
hold on. I thought we were a standardized test, high stakes environment podcast, live show type of deal. No, yeah. I'm totally kidding.
I just started to break out in hives, Dan.
Yep. That's what we're all about here at Iowa Chat. All right, Kim. So something that I know that we want to talk about and give some time to talk about tonight is Strobel Summit. So that's a free 6-session professional learning that starts July 11th. So tell us what we're in store for when we sign up.
Yeah. So what I've done is I've interviewed kind of like 6 pioneer educators. So we have Hal Bowman coming on to talk about, he's the Teach Like a Rockstar guy, and he's going to talk about relationships and culture in the classroom. And I have Matt Miller, who's going to talk about ditch that homework. And so basically these are 6 1-hour sessions that are all going to be online. So you can sit on your couch, get cuddled up with your PJs, and we will release 1 1-hour video a day. For 6 days, and we're going to leave it open for 3 weeks, and you will be able to earn 6 professional growth credits. And so for every hour that you watch, you'll be able to download a certificate with 1 credit hour, and it's all free. It's just kind of my way of like planting some seeds out there, kind of getting us thinking about the new year and what our goals might be. And I mean, I'm just a learner, and I find that teachers are the very same way. They're always willing to kind of consider new schools of thought. So I'm really hoping that it kind of invigorates them as they kind of move back into getting their classrooms ready. But it's all free and it's all online and it will be open for 3 weeks.
And we did share a link to that on our Twitter hashtag. But even if you just do a Google search for Strobel Summit, it's the first thing that pops up. So you can definitely find the link to register for that on our website or on our hashtag, or you can find it easily with a Google search. So thanks for sharing about that, Kim.
Yeah, I want to share one more thing, Andrea. If they do go to StrobelEducation.com, they can sign up for our newsletter. And what that's going to be is we give away a lot of freebies, and we do market our workshops and stuff through that too. But there's a little bitty box on there that is checked for joy drops. And so what we do is every other week I send a happiness tip. It's not related to education. It's just a little inspiring tip that I want teachers to sit down on a Thursday morning and read a 30-minute post about a happiness tip, or sometimes it's even a struggle I'm having, but we call them joy drops. And so if teachers want to get signed up for that, you can just go to StrobelEducation.com and then our newsletter.
I will put a link to that on our Twitter hashtag as well, so they can sign up for the joy drop if they are so inclined. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Kim, we are winding down. So we know that one thing that's next for Kim Strobel is the Strobel Summit coming up here July 11th, and some of those free professional learning opportunities that you've mentioned. So outside of that, what's next for Kim Strobel? What does the summer look like and near future for you in your world?
Okay, well, so we here at Strobel Education are gearing up for our fall workshops. So we're going to be teaching Growth Mindset and Genius Hour throughout Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky in the fall. Then I also travel throughout the country and do a lot of on-site PD. So we kind of go in waves, and I have been working from home the last 2 weeks, and I have another week of work from home before things kind of get jump-started again. So I'm working on that. We're launching our digital courses here in a couple of weeks. So for people who can't make it to the Growth Mindset Workshop or the Genius Hour one or trauma, but they want that PD for their districts, we're offering some online courses that are going to kind of be in like 30-minute modules so that teachers can maybe get a little bit of it throughout the year. And then I'm taking a vacation with my family to Gulf Shores, Alabama, and I'm excited about that. So that's what it kind of looks like in our world. It's got some chaos, but also a little bit of downtime planned.
Chaos and calm. We all need a little bit of that, right?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to start closing up here shortly, but I want to remind you guys of some resources that you can find a lot of awesome things on the website www.strobeleducation.com, but you can also go to www.kimstrobel.com, and you can find Kim on Twitter at StrobelED. And now I'm going to give you just a little bit to give us a closing message, Kim, before I talk about some upcoming national events.
Well, I just thank everybody for being with us tonight and giving me the opportunity to spread a little bit of joy and a little bit of positivity and mostly a little bit of hope. I think that's something that we need right now in education. We need some hope, and we're all on a mission, you know, to show up for kids and to influence and impact and change lives. And that's just a part of who we are. So I just wish everyone the best as they continue to be on their mission to impact our students. Thank you.
Absolutely. We're so glad that you joined us this evening. I'm going to take just a minute here to talk about local and regional events coming up soon. School Administrators of Iowa Conference is coming up August 8th and 9th in Des Moines, Iowa. We're again going to be kicking off the conference with a special Iowa Ed Chat Live show on August 8th at 8 a.m. So you can go ahead and follow our hashtag IA Ed Chat and hashtag SAIConf, CONF18. Either one of those hashtags for more information in the next couple of weeks. We'll get out there who we're going to be interviewing. If you have a local, regional, or national event that you'd like us to highlight on our live show, just give us a link and we will give it a shout out. I'm going to send it over to Dan to close us out for tonight.
All righty. So thank you everyone for joining us tonight and sharing your thoughts on Iowa Ed Chat Live. This is usually the last Sunday of every month, and it is great with learning with all of you every week. A very special thank you to our guest tonight, happiness coach Kim Strobel. And we want to remind you to be sure to follow some of the new friends that you met this evening and visit the hashtag IAEdChat to continue the conversation. And you can also find a great deal of resources on our website. That's tinyurl.com/IAEdChat. We have everything from all of our Twitter chat archives to our podcasts, to our live shows, our contact information, anything that you need related to Iowa Ed Chat, check us out again, tinyurl.com/IAEdChat. We are going to be back next week with another great topic. Until that time, be the change. Good night, everyone.